America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorneys. Shut up. Do not attempt to think or depression may occur. Stay in your home. Curfew is at 7 p.m. sharp after work. Anyone caught outside the gates of their subdivision sectors after curfew will be shot. Remain calm. Do not panic. Your neighborhood watch officer will be by to collect urine samples in the morning. Anyone caught interfering with the collection of urine samples will be shot. Stay in your home. Remain calm. The number one enemy of progress is question. National security is more important than individual will. All sports broadcasts will proceed as normal. No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drugs prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now mandatory. Be happy. At last, everything is done for you.
Welcome back. You're still listening to the Freedom Ministry. I'm your host, Chris Switzer. And we have the caller still holding over. I appreciate it. Laura in Michigan. How are you?
As I said before the break, it's the third most corrupt nation in Europe and the ninth most corrupt nation on the planet. So to me, what I think is my opinion, just all that Putin's doing is trying to clean up the Jews and the corruption. And for the Christian Ukrainians, they're going to be left. It's going to be a better country for them. But of course, you don't see that on any of the mainstream news. Yeah. And, you know, of course, Victoria Nuland had overturned the duly elected president, and they brought in these Jewish oligarchs, and they've been draining Ukraine dry and just taking all their assets. So Putin's doing them a favor, and the people who are fighting him are the people who want to keep the corruption going.
Well, I think it's a little bit of the wag the dog. If you're familiar with the screenplay, from Hoffman, Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro.
Yes.
All the world's the stage. I mean, yes, people are dying, but it's not those who would ever, be worth taking out to actually get rid of the evil. They're secure in their bunkers or their palaces, just dictating to those under them what to do. And Putin's actually been part of the old guard Bolsheviks from, before the USSR fell. So he's a holdover from that time, and he has some surprising Jewish connections, to Chabad Lubavitch. He actually brought and reinstated the Jewish synagogues over in Russia when he first came into power over there. So it's hard to say that he's, against any of the Jewish powers. I would say he's very much in league and playing his role very well. It's some 4D, 5D chess going on.
Another thing Biden said, he's going to put all these sanctions on Russia, and they can't use the dollars or yen. He's been stockpiling gold. There's all kinds of gold. So if he wants to buy anything or needs money, they're going to all take gold. They're not going to worry about the money. Sanctions mean nothing.
Yeah, look
so
at
that. So anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay, I'll let you go. I just want to put my two cents in for that.
Of course.
I really do think that he is trying to clean out a lot of the corruption. And maybe he wants the corruptions for himself, but, you know, I just think it's going to be a better place once we get, once they stop the fighting. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate your call, Laura. Thank you. I will touch on this before I drop the Ukraine subject and get back into the finishing the report from Pontius Pilate. But I will say this. Russia, just look at the place. Look at the country. And, of course, you know, Putin's been in power for years and years and years. It's anti-white. It's an anti-white nation. They have, you know, it's all geared toward multiculturalism and tolerance. And they promote it as freedom, right? It's not. It's just like in America where they've literally destroyed, you know, any old culture that we had where, you know, classic Americana. It's been destroyed in place of multiculturalism. And it's anti-white. And you can see it. It is palpable in America. Well, it's not much different in Russia, unfortunately. So if that's any indication of what would happen had Putin had full control over the Ukraine, well, hey, I mean, it's not very good for you if you're white. and it's so ironic to me that people of, you know, quote-unquote minorities or color, which really, you know, that when they talk about minorities now in America, they mean the whites, they will gravitate towards white nations, right? They want what the whites build up. But then it gets destroyed. It's absolutely disgusting to me. And if you're, you know, for anti-white stuff and you're against, you know, whites having their own control of their society, their people, their culture, how dare you? Because then the same people like that will say, well, you know, the blacks should have this, the Jews should have this. Well, why is it okay for that? It makes no sense. But I'm going to get off that subject for a moment, get back into Pontius Pilate's report to Tiberius Caesar about Jesus Christ, his crucifixion, and the arrest that led to it, of course. And I'm going to continue. "Crucify him! Crucify him!" cried the relentless rabble. The vociferations of the infuriated mob shook the palace to its foundations. And this is the scene of the mob, you know, outside the praetorium with, of course, Pontius Pilate trying everything he could to dispel the mob but not put him to death. There was but one who appeared to be calm in the midst of the vast multitude. It was the Nazarene, Jesus. After many fruitless attempts to protect him from the fury of his merciless persecutors, I adopted a measure which at the moment appeared to me to be the only one that could save his life. I proposed, as it was their custom to deliver a prisoner on such occasions, to release Jesus and let him go free, that he might be the scapegoat, as they called it. But they said Jesus must be crucified. I then spoke to them of the inconsistency of their course as being incompatible with their laws, showing that no criminal judge could pass sentence on a criminal unless he had fasted one whole day, and that the sentence must have the consent of the Sanhedrin, and the signature of the president of that court, that no criminal could be executed on the same day his sentence was fixed. And the next day, on the day of his execution, the Sanhedrin was required to review the whole proceeding, also according to their law. And a man was stationed at the door of the court with a flag, and another a short way off, on horseback, to cry the name of the criminal and his crime, and the names of his witnesses, and to know if anyone could testify in his favor. And the prisoner, on his way to execution, had the right to turn back three times, and to plead any new thing in his favor. I urged all these pleas, hoping that they might awe them into subjection, but they still cried, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" I then ordered Jesus to be scourged, hoping this might satisfy them, but it only increased their fury. I then called for a basin and washed my hands in the presence of the clamorous multitude, thus testifying that in my judgment, Jesus of Nazareth had done nothing deserving of death, but in vain. It was his life these wretches thirsted for. They only became more bloodthirsty after the scourging of my Messiah, the creator God of this world, Jesus Christ. Thanks for calling, Tom. We have Tom on line one in Utah.
Hi there, Chris.
Hello,
first
Tom.
First thing I gotta do is compliment Mike and being a good student. Mike in Kentucky. My early profession was in veterinary and human pathology. And of course, being raised in a very strong Christian family, as I went through a crisis in my life and changed my behavior totally and began to actually respect the pathology, I was looking for a correlation or a cooperation of the truth in science with the truth from religion or from faith. I was really curious. I was driven to go back into the scriptures. I'd been raised in the scriptures from my youth, but I was driven to go back into the scriptures and find a match to make sure that pathology, a hard science, right, matched the truth from the Lord. Curiously, I was driven to not only very thoroughly examine the scriptures, but I also looked for other sources like the writings of Josephus.
Yes.
I'm curious, you're referring to the testimony of Pilate, right?
Correct.
Can you let me know where that's from? I'd love to have
sure.
that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I will put the link, actually. I'll get it to the producer to attach it to the archive, but I can give it to you, you know, right over the phone here. It's if you type in the Archko volume, A-R-C-H-K-O, and then the word volume with the report from Pontius Pilate to Caesar, it should give you the link. It's on archive.org, and it's on page, let me get the page number for you. It should be page, where did it start? 130, or 129 of the whole Archko volume, because that's when it gets into Pilate's report.
What's really curiously wonderful is the fact that even the record of Josephus almost perfectly matches Pilate's description of Christ and his message. And of course, his message was hard on the merchants. You know, like I had explained to Mike from Kentucky, since I'd worked in veterinary pathology, a fish of the Sea of Galilee would be unfit for an Israelite. So they did sell that fish that they caught to the Canaanites or the other Edom, whatever community was there on that side of the lake. So then, of course, then the question becomes, well, what did Christ give to the multitude? Well, in fact, they had been given a ceremonial bread. It was baked in the form of and marked to represent the fish. So it was a baker's loaf of bread that was being broken and spread with that family along with the round loaf. It says the five loaves and two fishes, correct?
Right.
So anybody that had any sense would not give a mother or a child a piece of the fish out of the Sea of Galilee because, as I explained to Michael, in that day, there was no sewage treatment plants. The Sea of Galilee happened to be the only sewage treatment plant for all those communities, Capernaum and the like. With it being 600 feet below sea level, it was receiving all the wastewater runoff, the debris of that community. So the only sewage treatment plant in operation at the time of Christ was the Sea of Galilee. By the way, it's really curious. Of all creatures on the planet, the most pathogenic is a fish because it receives, you know, all the runoff from hospital, man's operations, all of that stuff. So to think that Christ would be that either ignorant or malicious is to give this stuff from that sea to the mothers and children of that gathering, you know, it didn't make any sense. So when I realized that, I said, that's a perfect match with the science. I used to have to go to Northern California to Petaluma to the Marine Coast Guard Marine Biology labs and do pathology on the fish and the sea life. And it was really bizarre how many of the diseases are in the fish, and quite frankly, all of them are. And wow. Of course, thankfully, our immune system, you know, defends us, and most of the time people are cooking that fish, but a great number of diseases or disease conditions come from people eating sushi or raw fish, which really is insane. But anyway, looking at Christ, you know, with a microscope, so to speak, I began to realize his message was to be at peace with not only man, but with all creation. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. And if you translate that out into your behavior, that means you can live as Adam and Eve were advised to partake of the trees of the garden or the plants of the garden. So I hate to say this. I know I offend a lot of people. But quite frankly, the program you are designed for is to live out of the garden, not out of the slaughterhouse, the chicken coop, the pig pen, the fishery. And of course, that message was coming from Christ. If you read carefully Josephus' record, you find out he was interfering with the businesses. And the primary businesses of profit was livestock, fishing, of course. Fishing, absolutely. The Mediterranean Sea was a, you know, the adjacent sea. So that was an interference with the money making, including.
Oh yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say that I love Christ. I love the scriptures, but you've got to carefully walk through them and find out where the facts are actually being exposed, and it is there if you're looking for it. Like I say, I love the writings of Josephus, and now you've given me another resource, and I appreciate that. And
absolutely,
Mike in Kentucky,
Tom.
Good shot.
Thank you so much, Tom.
By the way,
appreciate the call.
I'm Tom in Utah, and people that want to make contact with me, just go tominutah.com. And that's the current case. By the way, I work with the Citizens Committee for Human Rights, and a lot of the sex trafficking of children and women is out of the Ukraine. Isn't that curious?
Right.
So there is corruption in Ukraine. Whatever the source, you know, it's there.
Yes.
And by the way,
absolutely,
my bloodline goes to Ukraine. So I have an investment in those peoples. They have been violated as well. Anyway, thank you, Chris. Again, I'm tominutah.com. If anybody wants to call me, Mike, call me when you get a chance. And
all right.
I love Christ. I love the scriptures. And thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's a pleasure, always. Don't be a stranger. tominutah.com, folks. Go check it out. And he's absolutely right. The other source you mentioned, the writings of Josephus, which is very, very good. And as he did admit, they fall right in line with what Pontius Pilate's talking about in his description of Christ and these Jewish merchants and the Pharisees, the ones claiming to be the pious religious ones, right? How they were evil. They were not of God. They lied because they are of their father, the adversary, Satan, the devil. You can read it well. John 8:44. Jesus says it plain. I'm going to get right back into Pontius Pilate's report, folks. Often in our civil commotions have I witnessed the furious anger of the multitude, but nothing could be compared to what I witnessed on this occasion. It might have been truly said that all the phantoms of the infernal regions had assembled at Jerusalem. The crowd appeared not to walk, but to be borne off and whirled as a vortex, rolling along in living waves from from the portals of the Praetorium even unto Mount Zion, with howling screams, shrieks, and vociferations such as were never heard in the seditions of the Pannonia or in the tumults of the Forum. By degrees the day darkened like a winter's twilight, such as had been at the death of the great Julius Caesar. It was likewise the Ides of March. I, the continued governor of a rebellious province, was leaning against a column of my basilic, contemplating the dreary gloom these fiends of Tartarus dragging to execution the innocent Nazarene. All around me it was deserted. Jerusalem had vomited forth her indwellers through the funeral gate that leads to Germanica. An air of desolation and sadness enveloped me. My guards had joined the cavalry, and the centurion, with a display of power, was endeavoring to keep order. I was left alone, and my breaking heart admonished me that what was passing at that moment appertained rather to the history of the gods than that of men. A loud clamor was heard proceeding from Golgotha, which, borne on the winds, seemed to announce an agony such as was never heard by mortal ears. And I can't say for certain, but it sounds like, you know, God the Creator was mourning, grieving his only begotten Son given to the cross. It's unbelievable. Dark clouds lowered over the pinnacle of the temple, and setting over the city, covered it as with a veil. So dreadful were the signs that men saw both in the heavens and on the earth, that Dionysius the Areopagite is reported to have exclaimed, "Either the author of nature is suffering, or the universe is falling apart." Mm-mm-mm. Whilst these appalling scenes of nature were transpiring, there was a dreadful earthquake in Lower Egypt, which filled everybody with fear and scared the superstitious Jews almost to death. It is said Balthazar, an aged and learned Jew of Antioch, was found dead after the excitement was over. Whether he died from alarm or grief is not known. He was a strong friend of the Nazarene. Near the first hour of the night, I threw my mantle around me and went down into the city toward the gates of Golgotha. The sacrifice was consummated. The crowd was returning home, still agitated, it is true, but gloomy, taciturn, and desperate. What they had witnessed had stricken them with terror and remorse. I also saw my little Roman cohort pass by mournfully, the standard-bearer having veiled his eagle into a token of grief. I overheard some of the Jewish soldiers murmuring strange words which I did not understand. Others were recounting miracles, very like those which have often smitten the Romans by the will of the gods. Sometimes groups of men and women would halt, then, looking back toward Mount Calvary, would remain motionless in expectation of witnessing some new prodigy. I returned to the Praetorium, sad and pensive. On ascending the stairs, the steps of which were still stained with the blood of the Nazarene, I perceived an old man in suppliant posture, and behind him several Romans in tears. He threw himself at my feet and wept most bitterly. It is painful to see an old man weep, and my heart being already overcharged with grief, we, those strangers, wept together. And in truth, it seemed that the tears lay very shallow that day with many whom I perceived in the vast concourse of people. I never witnessed such an extreme revulsion of feeling. Those who betrayed and sold him, those who testified against him, those who cried, "Crucify him, we have his blood," all slunk like cowardly curs and washed their teeth with vinegar. As I am told that Jesus taught a resurrection and a separation after death, if such should be the fact, I am sure it commenced in this vast crowd. "Father," said I to him, after gaining control of my feelings, "who are you, and what is your request?" "I am Joseph of Arimathea," replied he, "and I am come to beg of you upon my knees the permission to bury Jesus of Nazareth." "Your prayer is granted," said I to him, and at the same time I ordered Manlius to take some soldiers with him to superintend the interment, lest it should be profane. So he provided protection to Joseph of Arimathea to, of course, bury Jesus as he wish. Uninterrupted. A few days after the sepulcher was found empty, his disciples proclaimed all over the country that Jesus had risen from the dead, as he had foretold. This created more excitement even than the crucifixion. As to its truth, I cannot say for certain, but I have made some investigation of the matter, so you can examine for yourself and see if I am in fault, as Herod represents. Herod, of course, the lying Jew. Joseph buried Jesus in his own tomb. Whether he contemplated his resurrection or calculated to cut him another, I cannot tell. The day after he was buried, one of the priests came to the praetorium and said that they were apprehensive that his disciples intended to steal the body of Jesus and hide it, and then make it appear that he had risen from the dead, as he had foretold, and of which they were perfectly convinced. I sent him to the captain of the royal guard, named Malchus, to tell him to take the Jewish soldiers, place as many around the sepulchre as were needed, then if anything should happen, they could blame themselves, and not the Romans. When the great excitement arose from the sepulchre being found empty, I felt a deeper solicitude than ever. I sent for Malchus, who told me he had placed his lieutenant, Ben Isham, with 100 soldiers around the sepulchre. He told me that Isham and the soldiers were very much alarmed at what had occurred there that morning. I sent for this man, Isham, who related to me, as near as I can recollect, the following circumstances. He said that about the beginning of the fourth watch, they saw a soft and beautiful light over the sepulchre. He at first thought the women had come to embalm the body of Jesus, as was their custom, but he could not see how they had gotten through the guards. While these thoughts were passing through his mind, behold, the whole place was lighted up, and there seemed to be crowds of the dead in their grave clothes. All seemed to be shouting and filled with ecstasy, while all around and above was the most beautiful music he had ever heard, and the whole air seemed to be full of voices praising God. Can you imagine witnessing such a thing? At this time, there seemed to be a reeling and swimming of the earth, so that he turned so sick and faint that he could not stand on his feet. He said the earth seemed to swim from under him, and his senses left him so that he knew not what did occur. I asked him in what condition he was when he came to himself. He said he was lying on the ground with his face down. I asked him if he could not have been mistaken as to the light. Was it not day that was coming in the east? He said at first he thought of that, but at a stone's cast it was exceedingly dark, and then he remembered it was too early for the day. I asked him if his dizziness might not have come from being awakened and getting up too suddenly, as it was sometimes that had that effect. He said he was not, and he had not been asleep all night, as the penalty was death for him to sleep on duty. He said he had let some of the soldiers sleep at a time. Some were asleep then. I asked him how long the scene lasted. He said he did not know, but he thought nearly an hour. He said it was hid by the light of day. I asked him if he went to the sepulchre after he had come to himself. He said no, because he was afraid that just as soon as relief came, they all went to their quarters. I asked him if he had been questioned by the priests. He said he had. Listen to this. He said the priests wanted him to say it was an earthquake and that they were asleep, and even offered him money to say the disciples came and stole Jesus. Don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be right back. We'll take your call after the break. Stay tuned.
Permission. Use only the drug prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company? And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a 4-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once-per-year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorney. Shut up. Do not attempt.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Freedom Ministry on RBN. I'm still your host, Chris Switzer. If you wish to find my work, you can see my body of work at bitchute.com/the Freedom Ministry. BitChute is BITCHUTE.com, an alternative to the Jewish ran YouTube, which just kept censoring me and finally just deleted me completely and didn't allow me to create any new accounts, and so be it. I'm going to take your call in just a moment, so please hold. I'm just finishing. I have a little bit left, and I'll finish this report from Pontius Pilate. But he saw no disciples, and this is the guard who stood outside the sepulcher. He did not know that the body was gone until he was told. I asked him what was the private opinion of those priests he had conversed with. He said that some of them thought that Jesus was no man, that he was not a human being, that he was not the son of Mary, that he was not the same that was said to be born of the Virgin in Bethlehem, that the same person had been on earth before with Abraham and Lot, and at many times and places. It seems to me that if the Jewish theory be true, these conclusions are correct. For they are in accord with this man's life, as is known and testified by both friend and foe. For the elements were no more in his hands than the clay in the hands of the potter. He could convert water into wine. He could change death into life, disease into health. He could calm the seas, still the storms, call up fish with a silver coin in its mouth. Now I say, if he could do all these things, which he did, and many more, as all the Jews testify, it was doing these things that created this enmity against him. He was not charged with criminal offenses, nor was he charged with violating any law, nor of wrongdoing any individual in person. And all these facts are known to thousands, as well as by his foes as by his friends. I am almost ready to say, as did Manlius at the cross, truly, this was the Son of God. Now, noble sovereign, this is as near the facts in the case as I can arrive at, and I have taken pains to make the statement very full, so that you may judge of my conduct upon the whole, as I hear that Antipater had said many hard things of me in this matter. With the promise of faithfulness and good wishes to my noble sovereign, I am your most obedient servant, Pontius Pilate. So, there you have it. That's the report from Pontius Pilate to his superior in Rome, Tiberius Caesar. And to think that he would lie or put things in there that weren't true is, if you know how Roman law worked and how the Roman authorities worked then, and according to their judgment, what would have happened, it's pretty grave. You know, their penalties were death for those things. So he was being truthful, and he wanted to make sure that his superiors knew that he followed the Roman law and that Jesus was not guilty of any law, both Roman or Jewish. They just wanted him dead, and he couldn't put down the riot. So there you have it. With that, I'll take your call. Thank you so much for holding. James in Vancouver, line 12.
Yes, good afternoon. I couldn't help wanting to call in. This is a very interesting topic. I'm looking at a painting called Christ Before Pilate by Mihály Munkács. It was a Hungarian painter, 1881. Mm. It's quite a good painting. To draw a line from what you're talking about to present day, I'd have to say Pontius Pilate was a weak leader. And just like to Joe Biden and Justin Trudeau are weak leaders. They're not leaders. They're being manipulated by people in the shadows. So if I may, I'd have to say that the people of the United States should not want to get involved in this Ukrainian business, what's going on. Because
I agree.
You see, China is waiting in the background to take over. And now it's going to become a China-Russia world. I mean, even Jack Posobiec talked about this yesterday the guy that runs the war room, who is Steve Bannon, that's it. And Posobiec says that this situation is a bad thing to get involved in, you see, because the Ukraine, that history in Russia goes a long way back, right? And you don't want to get involved in it because it's just going to get pulled into this quagmire, serious quagmire. So that was my comment.
No, I do agree, but I would also say look to Israel. Israel's influence. Well,
and I can mention,
and they actually
I don't know,
China as well.
Right, I understand. If you lived in China or Russia, okay, and you're Jewish, you're going to be watched 24/7 by the government. Okay, so while it looks Putin is a pro-Israel, he is doing what's necessary in order to keep Russia. And you see, it may look like he's pro-Jewish or pro-Israel, but in fact, his main concern is Russia.
Yeah, I disagree with you there, but I mean, hey,
sure.
We can disagree, you know?
Yep.
It's okay.
Anyway, it's a good show nevertheless.
No, I appreciate your call, you know?
Well,
I really do.
Thanks for taking. Okay, then. Have a good day.
You too, James. Thank you. I appreciate your call. Yeah, we can always disagree, have discourse, and that's where, you know, somewhere the truth will be found. And that's what I'm after, the truth. But I will say this, Russia has not been Russia for over a century, since the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917. It's been taken over by the Jews. And I think it's actually poignant at this point for me to expound upon this matter with Putin, Russia, and Russia being anti-white and pro-Jewish. Not publicly. Of course not publicly. Come on now. But behind the scenes, these are Jewish Russian gangsters, oligarchs, the rich Jews. The same said rich Jews from way back in the story that I'm reading you, that Jesus condemned, that God denounced and said they are liars, thieves, and murderers like their father, the devil. Now I'm going to read to you from Putin's surprising Jewish connection. It's all over the internet at this point. It was posted some years ago, but I you know, researched it myself, and this information is absolutely solid true. Okay? As Putin becomes one of the world's most powerful players, his surprising Jewish connection is revealed by Adam Eliyahu Berkowitz. Well, that's a Jewish name if I ever heard it. In the long history of Jews in Russia, the government has rarely been an ally and often been the source of persecution. Current Russian President Vladimir Putin, however, is a powerful exception, with Jews playing a significant role in his personal history and his inner circle. With the Russian army a major player in the potentially explosive multinational puzzle unfolding in Syria, this personal element could become an important, perhaps decisive factor in how the conflict unfolds. At the International Assembly of Chabad Representatives in 2007, Russia's chief rabbi, Rabbi Beryl Lazar, often referred to as Putin's rabbi, just like Biden has a rabbi, guys, look into it, told a remarkable story about the Russian leader, which he had heard from Putin himself. Quote, when he was a young child, he grew up in a very poor family. His parents were always out at work. He was fortunate that the next door neighbor was a Hasidic Jewish family, and they always made sure to invite him over, Lazar explained. They were extremely kind to him, and he realized that not only were they kind to a child that wasn't theirs, not only were they kind to a child that wasn't Jewish, but they were kind to a child in a time and place when it was dangerous to do that. Okay. Yeah, they didn't just take over Russia, right, and kill the Tsar at the time. No, that didn't happen. Trotsky and the gang, right? No. 30 years later, because of the gratitude he felt for that family and further respect he felt for the Jewish people as a whole, as deputy mayor of the city of Leningrad, he granted official permission to open the first Jewish school in the city. End quote. The family in Lazar's story was that of Anatoly Rocklin, Putin's high school wrestling coach, a man he considered to be a father figure and at whose funeral he cried. Putin described the family in his autobiography, first person. They were observant Jews who did not work on Saturdays, and the man who would study the Bible and Talmud all day long, he wrote. Yeah, I'm sure he studied the Bible. He studied the Torah, the Talmud, Kabbalah, the Gemara. Once I even asked him what he was muttering, he explained to me what this book was, and I was immediately interested. Putin interested in the Talmud. Putin's Jewish connection was not an anomaly limited to his childhood memories. In 2005, when Putin was made an official visit to Israel, he visited his high school teacher, Mina Yuditskaya Berliner, who lived in Tel Aviv. He even bought her an apartment in the city when he heard she was living in poor conditions. Oh, nice, huh? Arkady and Boris Rotenberg Rosenberg were his judo sparring partners under Coach Rocklin, and he remains his close friends to this day. The Rotenbergs are billionaire contractors, and the relationship is mutually beneficial, with the Rotenberg brothers getting government contracts worth many billions of dollars. The happy merchants, right? In fact, Putin has surrounded himself with rich and successful Jews, such as Moshe Kantor, net worth $2.3 billion, Lev Lviv, net worth $1.5 billion, Roman Abramovich, which you probably heard of, net worth $9.1 billion, and Victor Vexelberg, net worth $13.6 billion. These are Jewish oligarchs. The Jewish oligarchs, the same said Jewish oligarchs who now pay for the destruction in Ukraine. They destabilize and take over. It's the same blueprint everywhere you look. It's sick. That's why I cover the protocols of the learned elders of Zion and showed you in the book Propaganda, written by the godfather of public relations in America, Edward Bernays, the nephew of psycho-sadist Jew pedophile Sigmund Freud. So what's the common denominator in all this? What's the wickedness that needs to be removed here? The evil you cannot negotiate with. It is the Edomite Jew. The same Pharisees, the same Jewish element that God himself, through the Savior of the world, Jesus Christ, became man on earth, denounced, and said they were evil, and said they were of the bloodline of Satan. On the Jewish New Year, celebrated in September, Putin sent a holiday greeting to Rabbi Lazar, wishing the Russian Jewish community a sweet and happy New Year. For centuries, Jewish values inspired lofty ideals. Putin wrote, he said that these values enhanced relations among different peoples through charity and education, all in the interest of the public good. In a direct manner, he pledged fierce opposition to any manifestation of anti-Semitism and xenophobia. Putin puts his money where his mouth is and donated a month of his salary as president to the Jewish Museum in Moscow. Yeah, sounds pretty Jewy to me. His name is proudly listed on the museum wall as a donor. Perhaps due to his connection with the Jews on a personal level, Putin can be said to view Russian Jews as first and foremost good Russian citizens. This has already had international repercussions. When Putin met with then-Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in September to discuss the developing situation in Syria, the meeting produced positive results, with Putin expressing his strong connection with Israel. Israel, which usurped Palestine, they are not the Israelites of the Bible. They are the Edomite Jews. Satan's seed, the seed line of Cain, Edom Esau, and God hates Esau. Okay? We never forget that in the state of Israel reside many former Soviet citizens. And that has a special implication on the relationship between our two states, Putin stated. Every Russian action in the area has always been very responsible. We are aware of the artillery against Israel, and we condemn it. I bet you do, Putin. In 2011, at the Euro-Asian Jewish Congress in Moscow, Putin said, quote, Israel is in fact a special state to us. It is practically a Russian-speaking country. Israel is one of the few foreign countries that can be called Russian-speaking. It's apparent that no more than half of the population speaks Russian. In 2014, Putin was one of the few political leaders who supported Israel's Operation Protective Edge, saying at a meeting with representatives of the Rabbinical Center of Europe to fight anti-Semitism and xenophobia, quote, I support Israel's battle that is intended to keep its citizens protected, end quote. Putin is a powerful player in the explosive situation in the Middle East. There are clearly political and military considerations that cause him to look upon Israel as an ally, but it might be the personal connection he has with the Jews that has led him to be the most pro-Israel Russian leader the world has seen in a long time. There you have it, folks. And it shows. Putin's state is anti-white and pro-Jewish, and Jews are not white. They are not white. They want nothing more than to genocide any and all white resistance. And they say it. Don't go anywhere, folks. We got more to cover. We'll be right back after the break.
No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drug prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now...
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorney. Shut up.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Freedom Ministry. I'm still your host, Chris Switzer. Finish up the two-hour show here with a quote from Voltaire, who said poignantly, "To learn who rules over you, simply look to those you cannot criticize. Now think to yourself, America, can you criticize the Chinese? Can you criticize the Democrats? Can you criticize the Christians? Can you criticize the Muslims? Can you criticize the Jew? They're making laws against it, but nothing else. They're a special protected group, and it is a bloodline. It's biblical, and it goes back to the adversary, Satan, the devil. And I'm sorry, but it's high time that we understand and know our enemy. If you don't know your enemy, how will you defend yourself? How will you stay safe? How will you protect your children? How will you do anything constructively? So go to God, please read your Bible, and understand what is at the root of the evil in this country, perpetuated by the Democrats in office and Biden, who's a puppet. And I'm finishing up protocol number 3 from the Protocols of Zion. When the populace has seen that all sorts of concessions and indulgences are yielded in it the name of freedom, it has imagined itself to be sovereign lord and has stormed its way to power. But naturally, like every other blind man, it has came upon a host of stumbling blocks. It has rushed to find a guide. It has never had the sense to return to the former state and has laid down its plenipotentiary powers at our feet. Remember the French Revolution, to which it was we who gave the name of the great. The secrets of its preparations are well known to us, for it was wholly the work of our hands, the Jews. Ever since that time, we have been leading the peoples from one disenchantment to another, so that in the end, they should turn also from us in favor of that king despot of the blood of Zion, whom we are preparing for the world. At the present day, we are, as an international force, invincible, because if attacked by some, we are supported by other states. It is the bottomless rascality of the Goyim peoples, who crawl on their bellies to force, but are merciless toward weakness, unsparing to faults and indulgent to crimes, unwilling to bear the contradictions of a free social system, but patient unto martyrdom under the violence of a bold despotism. It is those qualities which are aiding us to independence. From the premier dictators of the present day, the Goyim people suffer patiently and bear such abuses as for the least of them, they would have beheaded 20 kings. What is the explanation of this phenomenon, this curious inconsequence of the masses of the peoples in their attitude toward what would appear to be events of the same order? It is explained by the fact that these dictators whisper to the peoples through their agents that through these abuses, they are inflicting injury on the states with the highest purpose. Thank you so much for allowing me a voice. Support RBN. Go to God and just do it. God bless America.
Use only the drug prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now...
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.